Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, a representative from Planned Parenthood will be on to explain the new IOM recommendations that contraception be covered as preventive care and made free to women under their insurance plans. I'll also be covering the story in some more depth myself. Also, Summer's Eve adds insult to injury with offensive advertising of their already sexist products. Well, much to my dismay, Women's World Cup is over. And it all went by so fast.
USA is nursing a broken heart
little bit
this morning.
Little
today
bit.
Is a national holiday in Japan. That's a good thing for them, especially for those who are up all night watching the Women's World Cup final.
That's right. Now, the ladies from Japan did defeat the U.S. team pretty much in the most dramatic style possible.
It was a big disappointment for me, but if we had to lose, I'm glad it was to Japan. They played well, and their country needs some good news. The good news is that this World Cup was good for women and sports in general, as it was overall a better tournament than the men's last year and drummed up a lot of enthusiasm for women's soccer. This show is heavy on the bad news, so I'm delighted to note that there's some movement towards development that would be huge for American women.
So after being asked by the government to weigh in, the Independent Institute of Medicine now recommends contraception be considered a preventive service with no copay under the new healthcare law.
This is something that has been long expected. Under healthcare reform, services that are deemed preventive care are to be covered by your insurance fully with no copay. The reasoning behind this is that it drives down costs. One reason insurance companies won't cover prevention fully is that other companies won't do it, so there's no incentive. But because they don't, a lot of people don't get preventive care, and so they develop medical conditions that are expensive, driving costs up. By forcing all insurance companies to cover prevention fully, you eliminate the copay arms race, and costs will come down because more people will be getting prevention. What's interesting about this is that common sense should tell you that contraception should be first in line for being completely covered by insurance to drive down costs. While many women who have unintended pregnancies have abortions, many women don't, and the costs of their health care are incredibly expensive. Women with unintended pregnancies who go forward with their pregnancies are more likely to have complications and are more likely to have problems with the baby's health. These are bad things in and of themselves, and they also drive up costs. This should be a no-brainer. But of course, they needed an independent study to confirm it, in no small part because of political reasons. NPR covered the reasons why this is such a big deal and why it's a controversy.
This one recommendation over birth control is the one that's getting the most attention and attracting the most controversy.
Absolutely. For one thing, it affects just about every woman. The Guttmacher Institute estimates that 98% of sexually active U.S. women will have used birth control at some point during their reproductive years, and cost is often a factor in women failing to use it regularly, which is why half of all pregnancies in the U.S. are unintended. So getting it for almost nothing, or nothing actually in this case, is a big deal. Beyond that, it gets caught up in the politics of religion and abortion. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops came out strongly against adding contraception to the list of covered preventive services. It said pregnancy is not a disease. I might add parenthetically that most Catholic women in the U.S. do use contraception, and the panel disagreed with the bishops anyway. It pointed to medical evidence that shows that spacing pregnancies results in significant health benefits for moms and for babies.
I flinch at suggesting that the anti-choicers are against this because of abortion. That makes no logical sense. Obviously, one of the biggest benefits if the HHS embraces the recommendation is that the abortion rate will go down. It's actually been climbing up slightly recently, and a major possible reason is that women are skimping on birth control to save money and then getting pregnant. The point is that anti-choicers use the word abortion as a catch-all phrase to indicate that women are having sex for pleasure instead of procreation. And we in the reality-based community should oppose that. The proper term isn't the politics of abortion, which implies incorrectly that abortion has anything to do with anti-choice motivations here. The proper phrase is the politics of female sexuality and women's rights. I realize this makes the anti-choicers seem like the bad guys. But, of course, that's what they really are. They're opposing a common sense regulation that would save the lives of women and children by making sure more women having babies are ready to have babies. This is about punishing women for being sexual, full stop. The argument against this may involve yelling the word abortion a lot, but it's going to come back to the same old, we shouldn't be paying for their slutty sex parties nonsense. That's the line that the Family Research Council's Jean Mohanan was basically trotting out.
There are different groups of people who have either ethic or moral objections to contraception, and so those groups of people shouldn't be mandated to pay through their insurance premiums for contraceptives for other people.
Which is a nice way of yelling, dirty sluts. The argument doesn't make any sense. Many religions have restraints on what kind of medical care you can get, but those people don't get to impose their values on insurance companies. Like, if you're a Jehovah's Witness, you can't and probably wouldn't even think to force an insurance company to stop paying for other people's blood transfusions. Anyway, insurance companies already pay for contraception. They just don't pay for all of it. So to claim this is a matter of principle is simply a lie. FRC objects to eliminating the copay not out of principle, but because they don't want more women using contraception. And the reason is they're trying to make sure that more women are punished for being sexual. And they especially want poor women to be constantly struggling with unintended pregnancy for having the nerve to think they have a right to have sex. Next up, I'll have the Senior Director of Medical Affairs for Planned Parenthood on to talk about what this report from the IOM means in more depth. I'd like to welcome Dr. Deborah Nucatola to the program. Deborah is the Senior Director of Medical Affairs for Planned Parenthood Federation of America, and she's graciously agreed to come on to RealityCast to talk about these new recommendations from the Institute of Medicine, especially with regards to birth control. Welcome to RealityCast, Deborah.
Thanks for having me, Amanda.
Okay, so I've covered this a little on the show, but let's go ahead and talk about what the Institute of Medicine is, what these recommendations are, who they're aimed at, and what would it mean for female consumers of healthcare?
Basically, the Institute of Medicine is a committee that's made up of some of our nation's foremost experts in women's health, and they were asked by HHS to review the literature on preventive care and make recommendations as to what is considered preventive care and what should be covered without copays or out-of-pocket costs for Americans.
And the HHS asked them to do this because?
Because of the passage of the Affordable Care Act. And when we talk about the recommendations that they've made on women's health, particularly, there was a women's health amendment to that Affordable Care Act.
And that's separate from regular preventive care, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what were the specific recommendations that the IOM made that the HHS should cover as preventive health care?
Yes, well, you know, the one that we've been particularly happy with is the IOM's recommendation that contraceptive care should be covered without copays. But there are several other important preventive health services that were included in the IOM's recommendations, and those include things like screening for gestational diabetes in women who are pregnant, screening for the human papillomavirus, HPV, the virus that causes cervical cancer, screening for HIV, and annual well woman exams.
And would those well women exams include pap smears?
Well, that's an excellent question. For some women, it does, but what is a component of a well woman exam really depends on the age and the health of a particular woman. Certainly, there are women who are come in for well care who don't need a pap smear. They're young, they're not sexually active, or they've had one within a few years that is normal, and it's not time to have a second one at that time. So really, the cervical cancer screening recommendations have been made separately.
And did they have any other kinds of recommendations for cancer screening, such as like breast cancer or anything that's female-specific like that?
Not in the current report.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about, I think, the contraception aspect of this, which is of the most, which will probably end up being the most controversial. Why is it important for contraception to be made available without a copay to women?
Yeah, well, you know, there are several compelling reasons. First, we know that nearly half of the pregnancies that happen every year in the United States are unintended. And if we could make it easier to successfully use contraceptive methods, we really could address that that very, very high number. We know that not only does contraception prevent unintended pregnancy, but it helps people to time their pregnancies, which could improve their health, the health of their children, and the health of their families, depending upon, their medical history. If a woman has medical conditions, she may need to seek other care before she becomes pregnant. If she's recently had a child, we know that there are optimal ways to space pregnancies to improve the health of that woman during that pregnancy and the outcome of that pregnancy when she does deliver. We can also reduce the number of pregnancy complications. We know that maternal mortality has been increasing in the United States since 2000, and so if we decrease the rate of unintended pregnancy, then in turn we're going to decrease the rate of pregnancy complications.
Now, I think a lot of people might find this all a little confusing because they don't necessarily understand that there's a medical difference between a wanted and an unintended pregnancy. Can you talk a little bit about why contraception? Because I think a lot of people kind of think pregnancy is pregnancy, right? So whether you intended to get pregnant or not, it's kind of the same. So I don't think they understand how contraception fits into this. But is there a difference between unintended and intended pregnancy in terms of health outcomes?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There is lots of literature that shows that if a pregnancy is unintended, then that woman is then less likely to get prenatal care right away, or to get adequate care when they do get care, and they may not seek prenatal care at all. And clearly, adequate and long-lasting prenatal care during a pregnancy is very critical in ensuring a good outcome in that pregnancy.
So one of the things, I've been doing some of the research on this, and obviously the political sides are kind of gearing up on this. I'm seeing people that are in opposition to the IOM's contraception recommendations say that this shouldn't be considered preventive care because pregnancy isn't a disease, and therefore it's silly to consider it preventing pregnancy prevention. From a medical point of view, what would be the answer to that complaint?
The whole concept of preventive care preventing a disease, there are different levels of prevention. I think what we should be doing is looking at this from the sense of, is this going to affect the life and health of Americans? And so if we can improve health by taking a particular measure, then that should be considered preventive care. And there is lots of evidence to support that, again, by preventing unintended pregnancies, by allowing women to space their pregnancies better, that this is going to really improve the life and health of these women. And for that reason, I strongly believe that this is part of preventive care.
Birth control pills usually cost around $50 a month with a copay, like somewhere between $40 and $75 a month. I think a lot of people seeing all the health benefits of this wonder why making it free would make such a difference. Why aren't women prioritizing using contraception and paying the money for it right now?
Right. I think especially in the current financial status we're dealing with in the United States today, people are just forced to make tough choices over what are the things that they can afford. And in too many cases, unfortunately, things like contraception and medicines for other conditions become considered a luxury when you're struggling to pay the bills. And we're talking about copays. There are lots of women who, it's not an issue of copay or no copay. It's contraception or no contraception at all. It's anything that we can do to make it easier for a woman to use their method consistently and correctly is going to improve their use of contraception and decrease the number of unintended pregnancies. There may be women who do have the money to make a copay, but it's a couple of days after they needed to start that next pack of pills, and every day counts. So really, one of our goals is to do everything we can to remove barriers to women being able to effectively use their contraceptive methods. And cost, unfortunately, is one of those barriers.
So I think one of the things that's sort of interesting in this all brings up is when we think of insurance coverage for contraception, we're usually thinking about the birth control pill or some other kind of hormonal method like the NuvaRing or even the Depo-Provera shot. But would these recommendations include other kinds of contraception that might be more expensive, harder to afford, but more effective?
Absolutely, and that's an excellent point. I mean, this basically recommends that all FDA-approved methods of contraception, and including permanent sterilization, are covered. And you bring up an excellent point with dealing with some of the more effective methods. I mean, we've just been talking this far about the cost of birth control pills, but actually some of the more effective methods, the long-acting reversible methods, things like intrauterine devices, implants, and as you mentioned, depot shot, tend to be costlier than birth control pills. And so if we can make those available at a low cost or no cost, we could potentially increase the use. In fact, there was a study done at Kaiser Permanente in Northern California in 2002 where they did just that. They eliminated the copayments for a number of their contraceptive methods, including the IUD and the implants, which we were just talking about. And that actually resulted in more women choosing these methods. Up to 137% the use went up of these methods. Wow. And they estimated that they avoided almost 2,000 unplanned pregnancies.
That's really amazing. So I guess the one other thing I want to talk about a little then is like STD testing, which is, I think, a little less controversial, at least currently. And prevention, which is covered in here. Can you talk a little bit about what the IOM recommendations were in the realm of sexually transmitted infections?
Yeah, they recommended a couple of things as it pertains. Annual counseling on sexually transmitted infections for all women, and as well as counseling and screening for HIV infection on an annual basis for sexually active women. I think those are important things because I'm not sure that everyone is aware of this, but not only, is preventing unintended pregnancy an issue, but also allowing women to become pregnant when they wish to is important. And if we can decrease the incidence of sexually transmitted infections like chlamydia, for example, we can have an impact on infertility.
My guest today has been Dr. Deborah Nucatola from Planned Parenthood Federation of America. If you go to Planned Parenthood's website, you can click through links to sign a petition asking the HHS to follow all of IOM's recommendations. You can find out some more information about this from Planned Parenthood's website. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Deborah.
Thanks for having me, Amanda.
Any particular act that really shows us the limits of public education campaigns to promote healthy behavior in the face of advertising promoting unhealthy behavior, it's douching. For decades now, doctors, health officials, and feminists have been trying like hell to educate American women on why they don't need to douche, and in fact, should avoid douching because it's bad for you. When I Googled, "Do women need to douche?" all but one of the links on the first page were reputable sites begging women not to douche. The one link that wasn't was someone asking why women date douchebags, which is the wrong question to ask because I suspect the guy asking it does not actually get dates. Anyway, a quote from the Mayo Clinic's website, quote, "Repetitive douching disrupts the normal organisms that reside in the vagina and can actually increase your risk of vaginal infection," end quote. Women'sHealth.gov says the vagina cleans itself and that the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists strongly recommends against it. Feminists have pointed out forever that douching is just full-blown misogyny. The colon is a lot dirtier than the vagina, but men aren't expected to shoot Summer's Eve up their ass. Think about it. Despite all this public education, drugstores and grocery stores have huge amounts of shelf space dedicated to douches. This is not there for their health. They're making money off of that. I'm guessing a lot of women who douche have probably heard that it's bad for you, but misogynist advertising that teaches them they stink probably worries them so much that they put their concerns aside and do it anyway. And now Summer's Eve is adding insult to injury by putting out advertisements that pretend douching is a cheeky, empowered thing to do.
It's the cradle of life. It's the center of civilization.
The clip shows, in order, a primitive-looking woman holding a baby and then Cleopatra greeting a crowd cheering her. So basically, things get ugly right away. To begin with, Cleopatra did not rule over Egypt because everyone thought her vagina was so awesome. She did so because of a combination of inheriting the title and being willing to play court politics until she was at the top. By the way, the reason she stuck out is also because women have historically not been able to hold that much power. It's insulting to reduce a woman and her power down to her vagina, and plain stupid to claim vaginas give women power when historically women have actually had very little power. But it gets worse.
Over the ages and throughout the world, men have fought for it, battled for it.
Let's see. First of all, they're suggesting that the only value men can see in women is their vaginas. So if a man does something to win your love, it's actually just your vagina he wants. Awesome. But on top of that, the notion that most of history is about men valiantly trying to please women is just plain backwards. In reality, women have been treated like dirt through most of history, not allowed any real rights, and certainly not given much in the way of respect. Yes, men have fought over women, but most of the time they aren't fighting for women. The women are trophies that demonstrate their status, and they're fighting over that status. The women might as well be pieces of gold or fancy insignias for how they're treated. Which makes more sense, since if it was just about the vagina, well, historically, those have been on sale to men for usually insultingly low prices, and wives were required to have them up on offer whenever husbands wanted. Vaginas, they're not that hard to get in a patriarchy.
One might say it's the most powerful thing on earth.
So come on, ladies, show it a little love. Cleansing wash and cloths from Summer's Eve. Hail to the V.
Actually, vaginas are not only not the most powerful things on earth, but in fact, historically speaking, the mere fact of having one usually has meant that its owner was deprived from birth forward of the right to vote, to own property, to decide when she had sex, and to decide when she had children. But setting aside how horribly inaccurate this ad is, let's also think about its arguments. They're claiming that the vagina is this historically marvelous thing that men and women have both been enraptured by for millennia. And therefore, you need some fancy modern product to somehow improve it? Sounds like you can't improve it. You know, if it's been the most amazing thing that ever was all throughout history, hopefully that's the message women will get from this, because ladies, you really shouldn't douche. If your vagina is healthy, it's perfect just the way it is. If it's not healthy, you really should have a doctor looking at it.
When I get down, you know I get down. When I get around, you know I get around.
And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts, Women's Soccer Edition. You know you couldn't just get through the entire Women's World Cup without some right-wing idiot taking pot shots at both female athletes and at soccer, right? Well, Mark Belling rose to the non-challenge.
This is kind of like okay now. It's our people winning. Plus, it's now being played by the proper gender because everybody knows that soccer is a sport for girls.
Actually, men's soccer is by far the most popular sport in the world. I wish that other countries thought of it as a sport for girls, aka women. Because many women's teams in other countries really struggle for respect. By the way, just because something is a sport for women doesn't mean that it can't also be a sport for men and vice versa. We don't bat the ball around with our genitals, you know.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for a weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.